Welcome to the weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on the weekly, this is the week of Troika Fest.
Oh.
There's a charity RPG bundle for a game designer with COVID-19. And Call of Cthulhu has some classic reprints that haven't been available for about 20 years.
So. The first time you said that, I was like, 1979? And then you was like, no, 1990. And I'm like, oh, right.
Yeah, right.
This is all just crumble in the dust. 20 years ago was the 90s. My God.
Yes. So, yeah, let's give it a start out with Troika Fest.
Sure.
So they're having an event, and it's already underway. We're kind of in the middle of it right now.
But being live, that means it's still going on currently, right. As opposed to like right having now. Ended by a week.
And it's also because it's not like an in-person event. It's an online event. It's composed of live streams and just kind of walkthroughs and things. And there's also a Kickstarter that they're doing associated to it. So Troika Fest is the perfect event for someone that's never played this whimsical tabletop RPG. Hmm. So it's a 2+ players game, low strategic depth, and the publisher is Milsonian Arts Council. And they did, and here's the book right here. So their hardcover book is really nice.
Yeah, it does look nice.
Yeah, great art in it. But it's available, it was available in some bundles, and it's the digital version.
I think I've said before, I think I have it as a bundle, but still haven't read it yet.
Mm. Yeah, and it's interesting. It's very good. And I really enjoy the artwork. But it's running from April 5th through the 11th. And so they invited game designers and streamers and everybody to just kind of either produce something for it or talk about it or just kind of introduce it. So just a celebration of what it is.
Cool.
So it's it's actual play streams, scheduled game jam, and a launch of a new supplement on Kickstarter.
Cool.
Yeah. So kind of a loose celebration. And let's see. So... So Twitch, if you head over to Twitch and do a search for Troika, you'll find the fan art, stories, adventures, live streams, and jam entries for the hashtag TroikaFest. And there's also a YouTube channel, Quackalopes, a Discord server, and a YouTube channel. Oh. So lots of ways to kind of interact with the game. So they're working with Plus One XP, EXP. to do this, and we will start moving again momentarily. Hey. And so the jam itself started on April 1st and runs through the 29th, and it gives interested creators a month to create their own hacks and adventures or character backgrounds for the community to peruse.
And I see a lot of Troika stuff pop up on itch.io.
Yes.
And they're usually like backgrounds or something called spheres. And I think spheres might be kind of like little mini settings for Troika.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like it's very, the books themselves, like there's already a lot you can kind of play around with in just the basic book. And then people are developing settings that have, and basically most of this book is random like six D66 character generation, D66 like enemies or encounters, but in the descriptions of all of those kind of is the world,
right?
And it's kind of open to your interpretation. It's not specifically, you can kind of play with what this means or who that would be in the world. And some settings get more specific, but it is kind of meant to be more free form and just imagine let your kind of imagination take over. So so this book, the Numinous edition, is the latest iteration, and I think we just have to give up
and pose
yes
to something that doesn't look terrible, so when it freezes again,
right, like that.
Wow, that was like less than 10 seconds.
Yeah. Sorry, so this, the audio is going to be even worse too, because it's just going to be us restarting.
Yeah.
So sorry about that for this week. This is the latest iteration of the Rules Light RPG. So it's kind of, inspired, like we said before, by the 80s British games like Fighting Fantasy.
Right.
And uses D6s. So,
D6?
I think it's only D6s. And it, but has a more modern sensibility in the way that, how the game master works and how the world is built.
And hopefully how it's presented.
Yeah,
someone who read through like the old D&D rule cyclopedia, that thing's a mess. Like it might be great rules, you'll never find them.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're interested at all, if you haven't heard of the game or are interested in seeing what it's about, yeah, take a look at some of the actual plays and see, you know, kind of the style of that game and how some people deal with it. So the author, Daniel Sell, he's the co-founder of the Melsonian Arts Council, and he is also, they're kickstarting, let me get, what is that? They're kickstarting also the a first-party supplement, which is the Academies of the Arcane.
Oh, cool.
So during, it's going to start during this week. So it's a source book for everything the group might need to insert cryptic colleges, mythic monasteries, or Montessoris, and other buildings full of wizards into
legendary libraries?
Yes, possibly. But yeah, it's definitely worth taking a look at. And if you have any interest at all, I would recommend, yeah, participating somehow in Troika Fest. And so that's got a few more days still. And the game jam goes on the whole month, as well as the Kickstarter.
I haven't made anything recently, but maybe I'll have to check out the game jam, because I've found that for anything I do in life, I kind of need an external deadline. And game jams often help drive that.
Right. No, that's good. That's a good point.
Stuff that is just for me, that I set my own deadlines. No. I'm like, that doesn't matter. Just keep pushing it back. Oh, passed it. I've lost interest. Oh, but an external deadline. Okay.
Right. I have until I die to finish this.
Actually, it's not a bad deadline, is it?
But speaking of itch.io, there is currently a charity bundle on itch for a game designer with COVID who is in intensive care.
Oof.
So 100% of the proceeds go to the designer Tiago Rolim, and he the charity bundle itself is all Latin American tabletop designers, and they've banded together to raise those funds for their hospitalized friend. And so all of their adventures and supplements and everything included, I think it's like 70 some items.
Wow.
So it's another big, yeah, it's another big bundle. Because in his home country, a day of ICU is about over $1,000 US.
Wow.
So yeah, this is, and because the city is in lockdown, they're prohibited from working. So there's no way to raise those funds.
Yeah.
So this is a really nice cause, and, it's great that, you know, this kind of thing can be organized to help support somebody in need. So the, designer himself, Tiago is the designer of Numa, which is a medieval Japanese RPG about revenge and oaths among frog warriors.
Okay.
So maybe taken from the old manga, original prints of the mice and the frogs.
And rabbits, yeah.
Yeah, right. Oh, rabbits, that's right. Yes.
It ain't Redwald.
Yeah, right. So, that's great. So if you just... and some of the other things included in the bundle will be Lucas Rolim's Packs and Blades, which is a minimalist OSR RPG, kind of inspired by Michael Moorcock's work. Cool. M.A. Gao's Minimo, which is a tabletop system stripped down to the absolute bones that provides a pocket-sized game that can be easily taught to anyone, including the elderly that may not even know what an RPG is.
No, I probably don't. Yeah.
And... Melo's Cyber Plus Punk, CBR plus PNK.
Ooh.
So it lets players embody a team of cyberpunk runners, and it uses the Forged in the Dark, Blades in the Dark, Forged in the Dark rule set.
I believe that's the same designer who made Escape from Station 52.
Oh, cool.
So I think I have a copy of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a single A4 trifold,
mm-hmm.
and the design is absolutely like amazing.
Oh, cool.
I'll have to print it out in color because it's like bright yellow with you know, like the black hazard stuff all over.
Right,
and,
right.
Yeah, it looks really cool, and I'm mad I don't have a printer that prints all the way to the edge.
Right. Nice. But so that's 72 items for $10 or £7 sterling, and all of the proceeds, 100%, go to Rolim's medical costs. So well worth it. And they've already raised about $6,000.
Cool.
And it goes on until April 30th.
Cool.
So if you are kind-hearted, please take a look at that. And you'll get access to some great Latin American-designed games. All right. Oh, and the last little thing that came up that makes us feel old.
Oh, no.
Because we have to do the math. Is Beyond the Mountains of Madness and the Horror on the Orient Express are being reprinted. So two classic campaign books for Call of Cthulhu. And I'm not sure in the reprint if they're saying that it's updated to the latest version, because, you know, 20 years old, it would be a much previous version.
And I have no idea what version of Call of Cthulhu that they would have been made for.
Right, right, yeah. So 90s? So Horror on the Orient Express was originally published in 91.
Okay.
So that's a two-part campaign inspired, of course, by Agatha Christie's, you know, whodunit murder novels, but with a Lovecraftian twist. And, yeah, it doesn't say they must be up. I don't know, because people may want to play something original. I'm not sure, like, what the editions of Call of Cthulhu have really done, if they've changed enough that old material is unusable or not.
Which one are we up to now? I want to say, like, either 7th or 9th.
Yeah, it's something much more than in the 90s.
Okay, yeah, that's a given. Something much more than in the 90s, yeah. I also wonder, like, how much the mechanics have changed, because the Call of Cthulhu book I had was, like, I want to say, like, 3rd or 4th edition. And I'm sure there are significant, maybe not significant, well, I'm sure there are changes, you know, because that's what a new edition does. I really doubt they went away from the percentile die mechanic.
Probably not,
so that probably, you could translate that probably with less fuss than some other systems
that's
that
true.
Have been updated. So, I mean, 55% is still going to be 55% of whatever, you know, version you're using. But who knows how, like, other little sub-mechanics are handled, so.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, I saw they're doing a film of, it's not murder. Is it Death on the Nile? That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, so another kind of Agatha Christie, you know, kind of, that's a Hercule Poirot.
Yeah.
So I think the Knives Out has inspired a whodunit renaissance. That would be horrible because that movie was kind of a deconstructed.
Well, there's also going to be a 2 and a 3.
Oh, really?
I think I've heard something that's going to be direct more to streaming.
Probably. Maybe, well, yeah. Like
I still haven't seen Knives Out, so.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was very reluctant because of the director to see it, but it was an interesting way to kind of deconstruct the whodunit by revealing really early and then keeping that tension, you know, tension going on of who is actually, you know, motivating things. Like, they tell you exactly what happens. So you're like, wow, okay, so what are we waiting for now? But so your expectations are always subverted because it's Rian Johnson. But the cast is amazing. Yeah, they're really good performances by a bunch of people playing greedy family members. But anyhow, Horror on the Orient Express is not that.
Yeah, it's a tricky word to say.
Yes, but I'm curious, if those are going to be popular or have kind of been in demand. I'm sure there's been, you know, scans and things floating around forever. So finally, you know, Chaosium will get some money from people actually playing those instead of just the PDFs that everyone has been trading for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess, this is not tabletop related, but in the spirit of feeling old.
Oh, no. Okay.
So it's a site that sometimes does tabletop reviews. So Polygon.
Oh,
Polygon had an article that I was really surprised by. It was fun to read, and whoever wrote it was was very young. So I was surprised that they had, you know, this kind of interest and information in the subject. But the article was about Tex Avery, right?
Okay.
The cartoon director.
I'm already interested. Okay.
So it just talked about, like, his situation at Warner Brothers and how he was kind of under the thumb of Fritz Freleng or whoever the director was that was kind of, you know, mentoring him. And he couldn't, like, go all out. He couldn't do exactly, because they kept pulling him back and saying, that's a little much.
So what, they wanted, like, the wolf to do, like, bigger eye bulges and, like, bigger shoulder pads?
No, that comes later, right?
Well, that comes later. Yeah,
so
okay.
This is Bugs Bunny. Like, this is him doing Bugs Bunny. And you could already see he wanted to do something else. And so then he moves to MGM and directs his own. So that's Droopy Dog, the wolf and all that good stuff. And so he kind of comes into his own and really, like, creates his kind of language of those extreme gags that we all know as, and most people just kind of associate, oh, that's cartoon, because
when it's actually Tex Avery.
Yeah, right, because it's specifically his style gags. But So I was like, wow, that's really interesting. And I wonder if anybody reading this is now going to go look for some of his stuff or whatever. Because when we were younger, that stuff was just omnipresent. You know, it was kind of early cable or even before that. And they just had to fill the afternoons with cartoons. So you had to Bugs Bunny half hour and a Tom and Jerry half hour. And they would just, you know, just keep rolling this stuff out. So a lot of the references you didn't get, the pop culture 40s actors and things, didn't make any sense. The World War II stuff, you're like, okay, whatever. And
as a kid, definitely.
So it was a lot of stuff went over your head, but you enjoyed, you know, the physicality and the comedy and everything. And I think that stuff has been, it's disappeared for probably about 20 years, the same amount of time as Call of Cthulhu supplements.
So is that the Horry on the Orient Express? They're all watching Tex Avery cartoons?
Because, so I just have a feeling that because of how the rights worked with cable, like, you know, they just went to Cartoon Network. Right. If the Cartoon Network wasn't running them, they didn't show up anywhere. And so then I looked in the comments. I made the mistake.
Oh, no.
Looking at the comments.
So this does connect back to Call of Cthulhu, because like the Necronomicon, you never read the comments
of
anything.
Do not open it. Yes.
Including whatever this is.
So I ventured below, further than I should have. And a couple of really bizarre comments. Right? And so I'm trying to decode, like, if this is really just heavy trolling, or if this is, like, legitimate, like, you know, innocent ignorance coming. It's really bizarre. So the first comment was, never understood the appeal of Jones or Avery, referring to Chuck Jones. Yeah. Thoroughly dislike their sense of humor, which is about all there is in their films. So I was like, wow, it's unlikable. It's the comedy of Tom and Jerry and Bugs Bunny is repellent to you because, very strange. So I was like, okay, that's odd. That's an odd reaction. But that had a mature kind of way that was written. So that person's not young. It's probably a boomer. And so, okay, a internet critical boomer. And then the next one, this totally just like, okay, I think the streams have crossed and people have no idea like reality and what, you know, media in context. Notice that Tex Avery's stuff only used visual animation and film editing and sound to convey the state of health of the characters or a thing happening. He never used a health bar, pop-ups, or a text box like, your sword is broken, this opponent is low on health, your crafting recipe resulted in XYZ. Like video games often do, because they're a failure of art made by insular hobbyists who choose to remain ignorant about our closely related arts. So,
okay, I guess because Polygon is a video game site.
Yes.
I can only imagine that is someone trying to be funny.
I guess.
But like, here's the thing. Like, we're talking about books like, I love fucking Tex Avery cartoons. Had those like, how to draw cartoons and anime stuff.
By right.
Anyway, the thing about comedy, especially sarcasm.
Yes.
The audience has to understand that's what it is.
You're right, right. Yeah, they got to know what you're going for.
So I can't tell if that person is being serious or trying to be sarcastic. So therefore, they have failed.
Yes.
And whatever they were trying to do is fail. And it's just weird.
And it seems just like so heavily like in this like Minecraft culture, this Minecraft set, like the references they're making are like very Minecraft. So it's like, wow. So literally, is that generation like insulated and cannot possibly like make the... That's really... Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't know. Crazy. But Tony, like speaking of references, it wasn't until watching Tiny Toons in the 90s. And I think we had the discussion before. It wasn't until watching Tiny Toons in the 90s that I kind of understood, and I was like around like 10, 11, understood what the old Bugs Bunny cartoons were doing. And that's when it clicked, when I was like, all these obviously caricatures. Just kind of like random people, they're the celebrities at the time when these cartoons were made. Right. And all the impressions, that's what Bugs Bunny do. And that's, I think, as a kid when it clicked about how it's kind of like a little time capsule of when this was made.
Right.
And I'm sure if you went back and watched Tiny Toons now from the 90s, you'd be like, wow, this shit is dated. You know? Or like, maybe I vaguely remember who that person was talking about. But that's kind of when it clicked and where it was interesting. But some of those things have become kind of timeless, or those like those character actors, not even necessarily associated with the person.
Oh yeah,
like I don't know what I'm drawing a blank on the actor, but like Zootopia was playing in the office break room, and that little shrew character doing the kind of almost the Godfather impersonation, which has now become like the Mafia Don, which was originally, you know, kind of like one actor playing one specific part.
Yeah, Marlon Brando's That's Godfather. There's a lot of things that have kind of like generationally kind of crept in, like people doing, so, you know, Ren of Ren and Stimpy is kind of doing Peter Lorre, and then that impersonation becomes another, like people, kind of that style of character just like makes its way in. So people that don't even know a German actor in Hollywood that played this like really sleazy kind of, you know, side character had this presentation, and he, you know, like it just absorbed into pop culture.
Yeah.
And so then you have that extra layer of then meme culture, you know, so people probably know Tex Avery from memes from The Mask, from the John Carrey Mask movie, Jim Carrey Mask movie. Yeah. So that's gets even more bizarre. But so both Call of Cthulhu and comments about Tex Avery made me feel incredibly old this week. It was very bizarre.
They also probably lost you a couple points of sanity.
Yeah, right. It did. It definitely did. Yeah, so avoid the comments. They are eldritch at best.
Yeah. Now, I'm actually kind of wondering if, talking about sort of like conversions, because talking about sanity, I think there's a really good point recently about kind of the sanity mechanics in tabletop RPGs having the potentially problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about the book that I've read, but we've still not had a chance to play with everything and doesn't narrow it down, Fate of Cthulhu, where you're basically playing Terminator-style characters coming back from a future where one of the mythos creatures has won, and it's your job to prevent that disaster from happening.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no sanity mechanic. Instead, there's the corruption mechanic, where you get more basically physically, you manifest more of these eldritch kind of things, which let you do bigger and nastier things, but at the cost of your more physical well-being than mental. That all connected, because I wonder if you could look at these newly republished or newly available Chaosium modules, you'd have to do a fair amount of work to shift it from investigation to more I'm back from the future kind of action stuff. Mm-hmm, but maybe you could use those as inspiration for a Fate of Cthulhu game.
Right. Yeah, that is interesting. And just, I think that we're now in this, like, you know, the problematic nature of reprinting is you're taking something, you know, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years out of a cultural context and putting it in now. And if you're just straight reprinting it, then it's,
you know, who knows what's going to be in it.
Yeah, there's going to be all kinds of reactions. And
especially if it's Call of Cthulhu, where, like, to be honest, H.P. Lovecraft was a raging racist, and that stuff creeped into all his work. And that kind of, I think, unintentionally got ported over to in bits and pieces to Call of Cthulhu, especially if you're going to do like 1920s stuff.
Well, yeah, because you're going to have like exoticism and like, you know, locations and things where it's the, you know, the white travelers, you know, encountering the mysteries of foreign lands. Yeah,
are those people just foreigners, or are they horrible Cthulhu cultists? I don't know. Kind of the same thing, maybe. Yeah,
right. Yeah. I'm attacking their religious practices because I suspect they possibly could be. Right.
Actually, it doesn't really matter. You know? Cthulhu's a cover just for we don't like these people.
Right. You just call it. You just call them. Cthulhu cultist, just so that you can. Take them apart. Yeah. So. Yeah. So that's that's a very thing that we're going to kind of keep running into. And I mean, people. But I don't think, and this is a discussion I think it was going to kind of keep continuing. I don't think we should erase the originals. Like, the originals should be allowed to exist as like historical documents.
Right.
And nobody should be selling them if there is like horrible racism or something in there. A company can't say we're the good guys and we, you know, don't do anything wrong, but we do sell this old stuff. You're going to have some sensibility of that, but you can't understand the current context, the current sensibility, without seeing kind of where it came from. And gaming, you need to be kind of accurate or aware of, you know, kind of the origin and the arc that things have taken.
Yeah, like you said, kind of tying it to cartoons. I mean, either Warner Brothers or MGM, some of those old like Tom and Jerry cartoons and stuff are pretty racist now. Mm-hmm. And we'd had a discussion before where some of them have been aired with the tagline that says, you know, you know, these are presented uncut for historical purposes. However, the portrayal of certain peoples was, you know, was wrong back then and is wrong now, and like, we don't condone it, but to sanitize or erase these things is to pretend it didn't happen, which is kind of exactly as you said. So I think we've had a discussion before where I'm more okay with presenting it with that, especially if like the creator has been dead for a long time and is not there for like getting proceeds from distributing problematic stuff.
Right. But, I think that's true. Yeah. It's, yeah, it's a funny thing, and it's not going to end. And there's always, you know, there's always going to be a different sensitivity because, you know, cartoons were edited for racial context, racist context, but then also violence in the 80s. It started to become, you know, violence was an issue when, you know, somebody hit somebody with a hammer. Oh, a kid imitated that once. Mm-hmm, so we have to change that. So, yeah, you're always going to have to be aware. And if you've just deleted everything as you go along,
you'll have no Tom and Jerry cartoon. Right, you'll have no whole Bugs Bunny cartoon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There'll just be these establishing shots of these houses and a mouse hole, and then the credits will roll.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, so that's a very interesting thing. So I guess that brings us to the table, which
and how problematic Dark Sun is.
I think I want to bring that up because we have a reprint of sorts, a print on demand, of sorts. So they're doing physical copies now again of, or if they maybe this is, I think they just started because the digital versions of the Dark Sun box set have been available for a while.
Okay.
And I think they just started to do these kind of collections. They're doing it with a lot of TSR, old TSR stuff. And so Dark Sun. So I picked this up because I had listened to some kind of lore, Dark Sun lore, and kind of heard a lot about the setting. And I like the setting a lot. Yeah. It's like a really crazy, you know, because it's Braum. It's all kind of inspired by the art of Braum and kind of like pushing D&D towards more like sword and sandals and real gritty, you know,
possibly inspired by Mad Max.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And there's also kind of the underlying ecology.
Yes, right.
Where magic's kind of powered at the expense of draining nature.
That's what happened to the planet. Yep. Yes, that is the, you know, the magic users just screwed the planet. Yeah, and so, and I like how it corrupts all the, because all the standard races are there, but they're all corrupted, either by the sun or the kind of, you know, the living conditions or whatever. And so, so got this book for the setting and then looked at the, you know, second edition D&D rules or AD&D rules and said,
they're incomprehensible.
I'm never going to get anybody to play this.
Right.
There's no way this is actually going to happen. But the related to what we talked about earlier, Troika might be a really good system to port that setting into, to kind of go through, you know, for character creation, go through each combination of kind of the race and classes that are appropriate to the setting and just try to recreate a lot of that setting in both the enemies and the character choices to actually be able to play it. I mean, there's going to be like the psionics is a big part of this. So the mental powers, you'll have to kind of figure out how that's going to work and not make it too overpowered or underpowered in that setting. But there's just a lot of good stuff that you don't want to go away. Mm. But is anything particularly problematic in Dark Sun?
The thing, like, I don't think I had a copy of Dark Sun. Maybe I did. Mm-hmm. Box set. I don't remember offhand enough about it to give an answer, because my impression of Dark Sun was, okay, desert, Mad Max, all the races are there, they're just kind of different, and wow, psionics are a pain in the butt mechanics, like looking through the monster manuals, does everything have like 10 psionic powers?
I'm
just
this
is unusable. Even as a kid, I'm just like, never going to use this.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be interested in reading through it and finding if they're wow, that sounds like I'm out to kill people's joy. Like, I want to read through this book and find all the problematic stuff to tell you why it's bad. No, I mean, all I'm trying to say is I can't say whether or not, like, immediately what parts need to be cut out, if anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The things that I've come across just in the reading so far is it leans heavily on slavery.
Oh, yeah.
And
it
leans heavily on half races.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
The new half race is like a half dwarf race.
Oh, yeah, the mole.
Yeah, it's really corrupted by the environment. So yeah, other than that, I didn't see anything that stood out. I mean, you're going to have to, and in a rough, ugly setting with gladiatorial pits and things, I mean, of course there is going to be, you know, races subjugating each other, groups of people. So you just have to, you know, find a context that makes that at least, you know, comfortable or won't make anybody at the table, you know, kind of like, I'm not participating in this. I'm not going to make money as a character by enslaving elves. Yeah. Or
why are we playing Dark Sun to play like gladiator owners? And that's what we're gonna do. Like, okay.
Right.
No, but I guess on the slavery thing, I've been watching Vikings, the old history thing. I'm up to like season 3, and that's a setting that has slavery in it.
Right.
But I mean, I'm not okay. I was gonna say it's slightly better, but it's honestly not. But one way to to say avoid problematic issues with slavery. It's not possible.
To sugarcoat it?
Yeah. Well, I guess the difference there for me mm-hmm. was it wasn't like you weren't really dividing things by race. Mm-hmm. It was just, we captured you during combat.
Yeah.
You're now a slave. We fight amongst ourselves as often as we fight other people. And there's kind of like a system in place to eventually work your way out of it, depending on certain circumstances. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't really make it any better. But I guess if you were going to do Dark Sun and do slavery, don't make it this race.
Right. Yeah.
It's just whatever circumstances, like you couldn't pay a debt or captured in combat or something, and it's everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, like, came out of my mouth, I'm just like, that's not really better, but, yeah, if you were going to do it, I think that's a way to do it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And have it be in context, have it, you know, the setting is a desperate, ugly setting. It's not like a city, you know, a culture of civilization of plenty, you know, going down, you know, to finding less sophisticated cultures to just rob, you know, manpower from basically is something to avoid, because that triggers a lot of, historical imbalance, and we keep freezing. But anyhow, so I was curious about that, and that relationship, like immediately thinking about Troika, it's like, yeah, that could work, because and especially if you kind of pushed the setting a little bit more and made it even a little bit more kind of gonzo and crazy, I think that would feel very fun and very satisfying in that kind of storytelling.
I think you would kind of have to, because I mean, I keep bringing up Mad Max as a touchstone. I think that's a touchstone for this, because who wants to play a version of Dark Sun where it's the road just as a desert?
Ah, right.
Right? Like one or two sessions, you're like, wow, that was real fucking bleak. Great game. Want to play again? No. So you, I think, I'm sure there's people who want to play that, but for a long-standing game, I personally would want to play more the football pads and feathers kind of style of Apocalypse, rather than the, this episode's all about going to be all about you finding water.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Water is a precious, really? We're going to look for water again.
Well, it's
you failed your water roll.
Roll up a new character. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, that's very true. Something else though, that came up when I was thinking about and looking at Dark Sun. So we just released, or coming out, premiering this weekend, is the final piece of the first chronicle for the Mutant Chronicles. Cool. And so introducing at the end of this, because it's kind of part of the whole context of the setting, is the tribes of Old Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So the surviving tribes of Old Earth, and they've been changed by Modiphius in the third edition role-playing game, and a lot of people didn't like that. And I didn't really quite understand like the sensitivity or why that was. And the context is, it makes sense, because what basically happened is they came out with this Tribes of Old Earth, this Dark Eden setting, and it was great. They took all of the, you know, there are all of the corporations have, you know, kind of observers and scouts and people that are there. And they're kind of like messed up versions of those characters. And then you have the tribes, you have the four tribes that they each have a very distinctive and very, they're, you know, it's very Dark Sun. It's very like they're just so affected by the corruption and just the poison that is Earth, that it's changed them. And a lot of them have kind of religious, like they're on crusades and they have religious motivations. But the company went bankrupt right as they unveiled this, in the trading card game and in Warzone. So people are like, oh, more of this. And then it just died.
Right.
It was never expanded. So then I can understand Modiphius going back to that and saying, yeah, let's push this background, the tribes, and make a new faction. White Star is the kind of the Russian faction that they developed for the role-playing game. And people are like, who is this? What is this?
Right.
Where are the tribes? And so now I understand a lot more kind of based on reading through Dark Sun and realizing what if like Dungeons & Dragons ended right after they created the setting. People are like, you were just getting good. You were just doing something I finally was enjoying. And then it just disappeared. So I think that's where a lot of that sensitivity comes from. So yeah, if you do want to see some details, and I really did foreground, I kind of got rid of some of the trivializing that Modiphius did in the lore and really, really focused on the tribes in that setting. Take a look this weekend. We are premiering. So yeah, that's going to be Saturday.
Cool.
Yeah. Saturday, North American time. The seventh part of the Complete Mutant Chronicles. And this is a big one because there was no, it's a lot of small events and there was no good place to cut it. So it's almost 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a, that's quite a brutal video. But this brings to end the first chronicle in that setting. So now we're ready for everything that happens. The base setting or the kind of default setting of the RPG timeline wise. And then also where Warzone begins, where everything is kind of set because all of the good people are dead and all of the bastards are left, and it's all, you know, the fighting has intensified and the Dark Legion is back.
Oh yeah.
So that's kind of it leaves it off right at that perfect moment, and then that also leads to settings like Dark Eden and things too. Cool. Those possibilities. Yeah. So take a look at that, and I understand now because at first when I was just using kind of Modiphius as the model because it was third edition, so it was the most advanced of the settings. Like, oh, this is why people are really pissed off about the tribes and how they just kind of minimalize it. There's like there's some other people kind of wandering around.
So it's like Bauhaus, Mishima, I forget the other ones, Brotherhood. And the others.
And the rest. Yeah.
And the rest. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think their intention was to, have an old Earth faction that could leave old Earth because the tribes don't really,
No, they don't because they ain't got shit left there.
Right.
Like everyone who could leave did. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a little odd. I mean, I can understand for role playing reasons and for kind of, campaign setting reasons and things. But yeah, Dark Eden is really good. Yeah. It's really, really good. So, I've got. Get the original Warzone book and then also the new Dark Eden setting book from third edition. And the original is much richer. Yeah. And that kind of the conflict between the tribes is much more interesting than what's going on with, the White Star situation. It's just, Russia.
So what we're saying is we're never going to get a sponsorship from Modiphius.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, right. We just dissed their choices. No, I mean, it was a hard choice, I think, to make though, because, and they even said, we're not going to give you rules to do characters for the tribes of old Earth. You can kind of do that. We have, mutation rules and things. You can kind of homebrew that, but we're not going to do it. And I think that was a missing piece. Yeah. But that you had to make that choice. Yeah. You kind of have to, decide where your timeline differs and, how you're going to push forward the storyline. So take a look, this weekend at that. Yeah, that was almost 2 months in the making.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a brutal one. But it's got a lot of really good stuff in it. A lot of the, nice details come together. So you realize how hopeless things are. And then at the end, what I try to do is, kind of, everything you've seen so far, this is everything we've been through. Holy crap. And now the setting moves forward, after the first chronicle. So kind of did the remember when. Oh, that great exodus. We left the planet. Yeah. But it's been really fun. And now is the hard part because we have to decide what is next. Like mega corporation focuses, setting focuses, like named character, bios. So that's where everybody listening to this and watching those videos is going to come in because we're going to have to do polls and kind of find out, what you want to see next.
Interactive.
Yes, because there's a lot. There is a lot of stuff. And so, we have to find which pieces, we're going to tackle first.
Cool.
All right. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. That's HiveMind, HiveMynd. And you probably can't see it because the colors are all kind of faded out, but my shirt arrived.
Nice.
My Seeks and Synthetic shirt that I made arrived.
Excellent.
Despite the game being canceled.
Right.
So it's at least here for when I run that alien game next month, hopefully.
So the ship is just kind of orbiting the ship that's adrift.
Everyone's still in cryo sleep.
Oh, yeah. Right. That's right.
There it'll be a month. It'll be fine.
No problem. Just a little groggier. Yeah. Yeah.
How about you?
I just finished the Mutant Chronicles first chronicle lore and I also have some stories. Oh, I just posted a special edition of the Enmity story.
Ooh,
so
nice.
If you've listened to any of the machine created stories, and that's a little hard machine on the ears. Yeah, that the AI is a little uncomfortable because it reads really fast. And it's hard to slow it down. Lee Anderson read one of the stories, and so I posted her version of the first story, and it's beautiful. Yeah, it's really amazing. So her performance gets so much more across than any, computer or software could ever do. So yeah, so check that out on the stories.enmitycorp.com. There's a link under this video. And also then the live stream. Yeah, so the Abuse Cartoons live stream every week, Wednesday night. And that's abusecartoons.com and also on Twitch and YouTube.
Sweet.
So that's it for this week.
Awesome.
All right, we'll be back next week. And oh, we might actually move right at the end. We're going to move at the end. We're going to actually be able to
wave. Yeah, we're moving.
The
there we go.
All right. So that's it for this week. Sorry for all the technical problems. We sporadically restarted the video.
Just listen rather than watch.
Yeah, listen. Just listen. It's much easier to listen to. Okay. So that's it.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.